The fight late last week among Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, and the Democratic National Committee seems to have simmered down. The DNC censured Sanders for improperly accessing confidential voter data belonging to Clinton's campaign. The restrictions have since been lifted, but the incident shone a light on a little-known, though critical aspect of the 2016 presidential race, how candidates use data to identify, reach, and influence potential supporters. As NHPR's Sam Evans-Brown reports, in the Democratic race in New Hampshire this year, that data war may well mean the difference in a tight contest.
Mary Beth Stocking of Lebanon, Maine, spends many weeknights in the no-frills Bernie Sanders for President campaign offices with a phone pressed to her ear. Most of the time, it's probably not clear how her efforts fit into the big machine of the Sanders campaign, but last month, right after a shift of calling voters, she got a sure sign that somebody thinks she's making a difference.
I actually was just finished phone calling, and my phone rang, and it was the organizer from Dover saying, you know, congratulations, you reached more people than any of our volunteers all month, so.
The campaign gave her tickets to a big Democratic fundraising dinner with Sanders. These phone banks, which on the surface sound like a sea of loud voices, are actually a carefully monitored piece of a campaign recon operation preparing for a massive final push in the last weeks before the primary. The names and numbers can all be found in one centralized voter information database maintained and controlled by state parties and the Democratic National Committee. If you've ever voted in a Democratic primary, you're probably on the list. Campaigns use it to decide who to call and which doors to knock on. In essence, to find their supporters. Stacey Brown is a volunteer for the Hillary Clinton campaign in Concord and is hunting for ones.
Is he here?
He is here.
Okay, do you want
in? In campaign parlance, ones are a candidate's firmest supporters. They're folks like Jonathan and Meg Chorlian who were willing to sign a card saying they would commit to vote for Hillary on primary day. Meg says she's also trying to convince their college-aged son to join them in voting for Clinton.
President, that is the push I'm trying to make. If you vote, cast your vote this way, you could be making history.
Yes,
I'm getting goosebumps
thinking about
it.
I know, I do too. I kind of get teary-eyed a little bit.
The Clinton campaign ranks voters on a scale of 1 to 7, from ready to vote for Clinton tomorrow all the way to voting in the Republican primary. Once the campaign knows you're a 1, you are filed away. Another supporter who they will work tirelessly to get to the polls on election day. If you're not a 1, if you're someone on the fence like Tim Davis,
I don't know. I want to keep my options open.
The campaign will dog you until they nail you down. Here's what Stacey Brown told Davis when he said he was leaning toward Clinton.
Well, we're out and, you know, we're probably going to keep stopping by until you say, okay, definitely a Hillary. If you don't want to, we do have voter commit cards. If you want to sign one, then we would direct our energies towards those people that are really undecided.
Yeah. Davis signed the card, though it might have just been to get us off his porch. Once the campaign knows where you stand, they take that information back to the central office, where it's entered into the DNC database that only the campaign can access. Beth Richards, stationed resolutely in a beanbag chair in the corner of the Clinton campaign office in Concord, says she's been doing volunteer data entry since 2007 when the campaign data revolution first got started.
The user interface is nicer. There's more drop-downs.
All of this data is driving toward a single bottom-line number. It's the vote goal, how many votes the campaign thinks they will need to win the primary. It's often called the win number. According to Nick Clemens, who ran Clinton's New Hampshire campaign in 2008, each camp is trying to get enough committed voters to add up to that win number.
The most likely ones to be with us, those are the ones that we talk to earliest. Then we have to do a little more persuasion with those undecided ones. And then depending on how things are going, you know, maybe we go after the ones who are supporting, you know, are likely to support the other candidates based on what we know about them.
The trick is, there's simply not enough time or manpower to contact all of the voters needed to actually reach your win number.
You'll probably reach about 30% of the people who are on your target list, right, at any given time. The other 70%, you're going to have to model.
Modeling, as in guessing. campaigns take the data from their phone banks and canvases, combined with other census data and information like what kind of car you drive, other purchases you've made, and make an educated guess about how many supporters they have. And if you drive a Prius and are a member of a local environmental organization, the campaign may try to reach out to you in a different way than if you have only voted in one Democratic primary in the last 12 years. Clemens says a good model can predict with 75 or 80% accuracy who will support your candidate, though there are times when the news can instantly change the models, like the night of the Iowa caucuses in 2004.
And then we're going to Washington, D.C. to take back the White House!
Yeah! When I worked for Kerry in 2004, we were calling Howard Dean supporters, and they were coming on board with Kerry because of what happened in Iowa.
The Kerry campaign had a list of voters who were leaning toward Dean, and after the caucuses, they started calling them up. What they found is the caucuses had fundamentally shifted the assumptions their model was built on. What all this amounts to, according to the conventional wisdom, is basically a tiny bump, maybe a 1 or 2% increase for your candidate. It may seem like a lot of effort for not much gain, but Mike Cuzzi, who was second in command for the Obama campaign in New Hampshire in 2008, says it's a big deal.
Hard to say, but if a race is close, that could be the difference.
Despite the fact that this work is a critical part of modern politics, it largely stays out of the headlines, except for in the rare case of an event like last week, which gets data in the spotlight. And there's a real reason for that. It's hard to get campaigns talking openly about it. Say you wanted to find out a campaign's win number or how many ones and twos they had identified.
They will never give you that information, just for the record. That is state secrets. That is the jewels to the kingdom. I mean, you know, whatever you want, whatever analogy you want to use.
Which gets us back to the Sanders phone banks. Last week, the candidate visited the opening of his campaign's 15th New Hampshire field office in Rochester. His message to his supporters was to keep at this yeoman's work of campaigning, to keep making contact with voters.
And the way we do politics is that the most effective way to go forward is door-to-door, phone-call-to-phone-call, person-to-person.
But how many people? We won't know that until Election Day. For NHPR News, I'm Sam Evans-Brown.
This week, we'll take a look at the tactics Republican candidates